This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
It's time for our Monday serial, a respectable veneer written by Rachel Doré, published by Upstart Press and narrated by Romy Hooper. This serial has been made possible by funding from the Earl Creativity and Development Trust with collaboration from Manawatu People's Radio. A Respectable Veneer is a story about love and courage, but we remind you of our regular content warning. There are elements of violence and references to child abuse. In spite of Ruby's worst fears, she tried to reassure young Edie that nothing was wrong. Later that evening, Douglas tackled Ruby head-on for the truth about her past, and his own trauma from what he'd seen during the war surfaces.
Edie looked across to the kitten.
I don't think Percy's got wits at all.
Ruby stroked Edie's hair. Your hair's getting longer. I should find you a rubber band.
Mum, I wish this was our real home, so we didn't have to leave.
What did you say that for? Edie lifted one shoulder.
I don't know. We're not going to have to leave, are we?
Don't worry about that. If we ever do have to leave, it won't be without a good reason.
What sort of good reason?
I can't think of anything, she lied.
You're just fobbing me off, aren't you?
Edie pushed at her.
It's stupid. The same as we'll see. Tell me the truth. Is Frank throwing us out?
He is not throwing us out. It was all Ruby could say. The unseeable repercussions of Lou's visit were hanging over them all. Where on earth did you get that idea? She held Edie's chin and met her troubled eyes. How delicate her skin was. You know Frank thinks the world of you. Edie bit her quivering lip and nodded. Now get into bed and snuggle down.
I don't want to sleep.
Edie rearranged herself with a huff.
Anyway, it's early.
You're overtired, that's what that is. And you've been a pain in the neck all evening. It's time to go to sleep.
Mum?
What? Ruby lifted the kitten onto Edie's bed. Here's Percy.
But, Mum, you're not telling me what's wrong. I've got to know.
Whatever it is, it doesn't concern you. What else could be spoken but lies? She had to stay calm. The thing is, sometimes adults have things they have to go over and sort out. I can't explain now.
Did you have a row with Uncle Douglas?
No.
You were grumpy with him before. Will you tell me?
It's nothing for you to worry about. One day, when you're old enough.
But I'm worried right now. I probably won't be worried about it when I'm older.
Go to sleep. Ruby kissed her daughter's forehead so Edie would not see the lies in her eyes. Good night now.
Oh, good. You found Mother's darning basket, said Frank.
I hope you don't mind. I took stuff out and put the needles and threads I'm using for the doll.
As I said, do what you want with it all, Frank said. Any socks in it?
There were a couple of odd ones with the heels out.
Good. Biff 'em, said Frank. Never understood Mother darning heels. They never turned out good enough to wear, and she kept doing it. What are you stitching this time?
Douglas stood with his back to her, gazing into the fire, his hands buried in his pockets. Ruby held up the doll, then settled in a chair to work on it.
I thought you'd finished that, said Frank. Other than putting the rest of the clothes on it, it looks all right to me. Professional, even. You could sell 'em.
She twisted her mouth. The doll's face wasn't right. She hated it. There was nothing wrong with the proportions of the features. It was the expression. She'd aimed for a comforting, lovable face. Instead, it had a look of helpless desperation that reminded her too much of herself. Taking out Mrs. Pierce's seam ripper, she began unpicking the pink embroidered mouth. A waste, really, but it couldn't be left like that.
What about a cup of tea? Said Frank from his chair.
She put her handiwork aside.
I'll do it.
Douglas made a half-hearted move.
Let her go, said Frank.
The men were playing cards and talking. When they saw Ruby with the tea tray, they fell silent.
Got it from Jacob's well, did you? Frank said.
Very droll, she said. Do you think we can stretch to getting an electric kettle one day? That took an age.
I've been thinking I might, said Douglas.
Sit down, Ruby, Frank said, stacking the cards together.
We should have a little talk, sort things out once and for all. Go on, Douglas, dear, you play mother.
Douglas poured the tea. Frank slapped his fingers on the table.
I can't have this sort of mood going on between the two of you. Look what it's doing to Tink. It won't do, especially with that fellow likely to turn up at any time. Ruby, I've told Douglas. Besides it being bad form, it's created an obstacle for ourselves. We can't hold our line if we're at odds.
Douglas nodded gravely.
So, we're having it out.
Frank took a mouthful of tea. She didn't want to dredge up any more of the sludge that was her story. Why couldn't it all just drain away through one of the holes in her threadbare soul?
I owe you an apology, Ruby.
Douglas lifted his eyelids, looked in her face for a second, then dropped his gaze and scratched the back of his head.
I just didn't. I don't know what to make of it.
No, she said.
Snubbing you, hurting you like that, it wasn't my intention. It is just too hard to take in.
She waited for him to say it.
This story of your, what you did before when you lived in, where was it?
Freeman's Bay.
Right. Freeman's Bay.
He floundered.
What Frank told me, I mean, what you told me, I'm sure it's all true. I don't doubt it for a minute. I simply can't understand how you could let yourself.
Douglas's face contorted, as though he struggled to put his thoughts in order.
I mean, why the deuce did you wait so long to leave?
Douglas scratched his head again. How could she begin to explain anything to someone who might have been cosseted in cotton wool most of his life? You do the best you can, one day, one night, to the next. Days turn into months, years. It wasn't the sort of place you just leave, she said.
But you must have asked yourself.
Douglas rubbed his forehead.
What sort of future Edie would have?
His words were a rear vision mirror on the wretchedness and danger they'd lived in. Like the other girls at Rat's Nest, Ruby had switched her soul off in order to survive. Good judgment had been severed. Future? There wasn't one. Castles in the air. And Edie? Edie was the pet of the place, with all the girls taking turns to look after her. A house full of aunties. And Mo. Truth was, Ruby couldn't recall asking herself what sort of future Edie would have. If she'd ever had hopes, they'd withered.
Oh, for Christ's sake, Douglas!
Frank slammed his teacup on its saucer.
This bloody rectitude of yours is a bit ironic, don't you think, Douglas? In our position, if it weren't for Ruby...
Douglas sank into his chair.
The thing is, he said, it's just that it brings back that time when we were making our way through to Trieste. There was this column of refugees. We'd seen them for days. Columns and columns of the poor blighters, starving and filthy, wandering in different directions.
Frank lit a cigarette, handed it to Douglas. He took it, drew deeply. He went on without looking up. No stutter now.
Strafed cars, broken carts, ransacked suitcases everywhere on the roadside.
He exhaled smoke.
There was this piano, lying on its side in a ditch, like a dead animal, and long columns of people, human wrecks, all the way along the road going one way and another lot going the other way. They didn't know where they were going and there was nothing for them.
Ash was about to drop from the cigarette.
We were swarmed by children begging, barefoot, skin and bone they were, some of them covered in sores. Some of our blokes...
His hand shook as he put the cigarette to his lips again.
We came across women selling themselves to any soldier passing. Some of them even had little bubbies at their breast, begging our chaps for food in exchange for sex.
Ruby's insides curled. Was this the sense he was making of what she'd told him? She forced herself to listen.
There was this one old chap.
Douglas's lip curled.
One of theirs. Little fellow, face like a walnut. Looked like he was wearing half a dozen shirts. Came up to me with this little girl about Edie's age.
He wiped his tears with his hand and his voice cracked.
She was wearing nothing but what might have been a man's singlet, covered in filth, arms like sticks. Been on the road for weeks, I suppose. He was going up our line, trying to sell her. He wanted to barter her for a meal.
He threw the cigarette into the fire.
What sort of animals did he think we were?
Frank gritted his teeth and nodded grimly.
Some of the fellows in the division were far from saints. What I can't grasp is, that was war,
Douglas began to shout.
And it was there. But this is our country, damn it. What were we fighting for? All that death and misery, and here... He bawled. God, is the world so much madder, so much more rotten than I ever supposed?
Yes, said Ruby.
It is.
She put her fist against her mouth, seeing the shadow image of one of our soldiers behind a church hall in our country. Douglas had his face in his hands, sobbing like a child. At last, he mopped his face with his handkerchief and blew his nose.
I'm sorry.
He reached for the cigarettes with a shaking hand.
Dear Douglas, Frank sat back. He's one of life's true innocent romantics, always wanting to believe in the goodness of man. Everything fundamentally tickety-boo, all cricket and fair play. Then he goes into a funk when it turns out not to be.
Sometimes you're a bastard, Frank, she said gently, this time not meaning it.
I know, Frank said.
This time he didn't laugh. He shuffled the cards.
Let's have a game of pontoon and another cup of tea.
Douglas turned on the radio, which warmed up with a low hum, and he hunched over it, fiddling with the dial. A commentator was talking about a modern composer whose music sounded like a pair of chooks trapped in a grand piano. Frank glowered. Douglas switched it off. There wasn't much more of it she could stand without bursting into giggles or having to leave the room, and she wanted to stay. Pontoon having been given up, she got on with her embroidery.
That's looking marvellous, said Frank,
when she held the doll up to look at its face.
You're clever with handiwork, aren't you? Mother was good that way. I say, Dougie, don't you think the face on that thing looks like Betty Davis on one of her better days? Spot on, said Douglas dryly. I'll put the kettle on.
Ruby sat the doll against the vase of blue forget-me-nots that Edie had picked that morning. At least the new face wasn't soppy. I'll make cocoa if you like, she said.
I want to stay sharp.
Frank put his book aside.
Cocoa makes me drowsy. I'm probably full of tea, to tell the truth.
Douglas poked at the fire.
We haven't got coffee, have we?
Only that bottle of chicory stuff, said Ruby.
Ugh, throw it out, said Frank. Put a record on, Dougie, and nothing too maudlin. There's a George Formby in the cabinet, said Douglas. Remember all that?
Frank leaned back.
I'm the husband of the wife of Mr. Wu. No, not that.
Douglas clicked his tongue and sighed.
Mozart, then. What about a bit of Chopin? Said Frank. You said you wanted to stay sharp. Sometimes, Douglas, you amaze me, Frank scoffed. How can you say Chopin's?
Ruby knotted and snipped the last thread and regarded them as they debated Chopin. They were her brothers, behaving as she imagined brothers behaved. Cards spread on the table between them, the ashtray, the matches they'd used as tokens, light-hearted squabbles and jibes. She loved them both. Frank, beautiful, and as wryly humorous as he was moody, kind and canny. Perhaps Mrs. Pierce had a touch of the fae in her. Douglas was a grown-up boy, full of bumbling kindness. She even loved him for the stammer that infuriated her. And Edie had loved him instantly. What a pair! Looking at them squabbling over which record to play next, a warmth grew in her chest, an exhilarating warmth, like a cup of hot chocolate laced with brandy. So, that's what real love is. Not the sick-making romantic longing she'd heard girls talk about. Not the turmoil of need and fear of parting. But a flood of warmth, overflowing and filling her to her skin, making her feel light. Yes, that was it. She loved both of them. If only the essence of the scene in that room, at that moment, along with the new warmth filling her, could be captured like a photograph. I love... She closed her mouth. It would be silly to say it. I love you both. They looked at her. I love the idea of a brandy, if there is some, she said instead.
Marvellous, said Frank. You're on the right track. But I reckon we stick to one tot of whiskey each.
Douglas got to his feet, opening the sideboard cupboard, reaching for the bottle.
One tot will steel the nerves, added Frank, to face whatever's coming.
You've been listening to A Respectable Veneer, a serialized novel by Rachel Doré, read by Romy Hooper. Listen to the next episode at 8 p.m. next Monday, or for the rest of the series, go to npr.nz/show/respectableveneer. Or search for A Respectable Veneer wherever you find your podcasts.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.